And here in Juneau with KTOO, I'm Yvonne Cremery. On Saturday, dozens of people gathered in Juneau to remember Saul Neely at a fire dish memorial, a Tlingit cultural ceremony. Neely taught English literature and was a community advocate for criminal justice reform through programs like the Flying University, a higher education program inside the Lemon Creek Correctional Center. He died in October on a backpacking trip in Washington State, where he was living. Saul Neely used to give lectures around a fire at an outdoor pavilion on the campus of the University of Alaska Southeast, even on cold and wet November days. His memorial was held at that same spot. Alaska Native Languages professor Hune Lance Twitchell was a close friend of Neely's. He led the fire dish ceremony, which serves as a way to give those who recently died food and messages of strength to prepare them for their long journey after death. The offerings are passed through a fire.
For our guests that are here that we share love with and courage, sometimes we offer abbreviated versions of our cultural ceremonies with them. The ways that we grieve, the ways that we move on as Tlingit people. So we thought we'd offer a fire dish.
Twitchell invited those in attendance to write names of anyone else they would like to honor on note cards to be added to the fire.
Because we're inviting them to come, the things that we offer to our ancestors, we give to the fire.
Neely was a professor at UAS for more than a decade. Even though he left Juneau in 2020, there was still a large group of people at UAS and throughout the community who wanted to gather and celebrate his life here. Fellow educators and former students say Neely always approached his work with love for people and for place. Laura Hale's trip read a poem on behalf of a former Flying University student named Nathan Block.
His spirit now resides within the threshold of the book, as he would remind us. Mark the first page of the book with a red pen because, in the very beginning, the wound was invisible. With every new or old book, rub it until it bleeds. Rub it until the goosebumps on your neck scream. That's where you'll encounter Saul, hidden within the pages, awaiting your arrival.
Ida Heather Burge was a student of Neely's, who now teaches Tlingit classes at UAS.
He started reconnecting with his own Indigenous family, identity, understanding, around the same time I did. And he was an incredible example for what that looked like as an adult, to build that community, to build those places, to build those relationships with people, both where you were transplanted and where you came from.
Burge asked all of his former students to stand with her, and a dozen or so rose.
I'm not quite sure what we're going to do now that he's gone. I thank you, Saul, for everything you've given us. You've laid a foundation. We're going to keep building on it. Cheesh.
Will Geiger said it was fitting that Neely's memorial was held at the Noyes Pavilion, where he attended each class of Saul Neely's post-colonial literature course, even on cold November nights like this one.
I've been thinking lately that Saul often talked about how, based off something Cornel West said, he considered time to be a gift and a giver rather than a limitation placed on what we're able to accomplish. And so I've been thinking about what a gift we all received having Saul here with us, rather than a impediment it is that he left us sooner than we would have wanted him to.
Many people talked about how much Neely loved his daughter. Neely's wife and daughter were at the ceremony, but neither spoke. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Cremery. A totem pole that spent more than 100 years far from home has returned to Haida village of Kasan on Prince of Wales Island. It's the first time any clan property has been repatriated to the village of about 30 residents. KRBD's Reagan Miller has more.
We are really small, but we're still here.
The Yadis pole is massive. It's too old to stand now, having been carved in the late 1800s, but when it did, it stood 52 feet tall and 4 feet wide. It even has a steel core and had to be barged up on a flatbed truck because it was too big for a box. Mike Jones is the president of Kasan's tribe. He says the village turned out on a recent Saturday to see the first piece of clan property to come back to Kasan.
I feel like the pole's been displaced for a long time and been wanting to come home and had to have some kind of recognition.
Jones says it's a symbol of pride for the people of Kasan, a Haida village on the eastern shore of Prince of Wales Island.
We are the original totem pole people. We're the first of the first. Totem pole carving for us goes back to mythical times. We are the only culture in the entire world to have monumental sculpture in front of every single house. Nobody else did that. None of our neighbors did that. So it really became a symbol of bringing our culture back.
The Yatis pole spent more than 100 years away from the village. Jones says it left with then-Chief Sanahat, Wilson Peel, who was taking the pole down to California for the 1906 Indian Crafts Exhibition in Redondo. Jones says he also took a dismantled house and other poles with him.
He actually took 200 tons altogether, including the house, the poles, and other paraphernalia, rattles and masks and things like this that he took down.
The pole was split into two pieces for the journey. After the show, it moved into a private collection. In 1951, the pole was found in a lumberyard, waiting to be made into pulp. The pole was then placed in the courtyard of the Colorado Springs Fine Arts Center until 2006, when it became too old to stand up and was put into storage. Then, in 2010, Jones says the idea of bringing it home started to reach Kasan, where, more than 100 years ago, it fronted the house of the chief.
The Colorado Springs Fine Arts Center reached out to the organized village of Kasan in 2010, expressing that they wanted to repatriate the pole. And at that time, we did not have our cafe or the carving shed, and there was some concern as to where to put it. And the main thing was the funding was not available at the time, so it stayed in storage.
But when Jones took his job as tribe president in 2019, it also sparked his desire to dive deeper into his Haida culture, and he started thinking about the pole again. It was then that he got an email from Richard Reinhart, the CEO of the Central Council of Klink and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska's Business Center, who also wanted to make the repatriation happen.
Like, first started going through this reawakening of our culture, and, you know, because we went through what we call the silent years, right? After kind of a, you know, there's been a cultural genocide that through the boarding schools and things like that. So a lot of us, my generation, I'm in my 50s, we didn't grow up, you know, really knowing who we were and our history and our culture and stuff.
Sea Alaska Heritage Institute helped pay for the repatriation, along with more help from Klinkit and Haida. Jones says that's an important gesture.
It'll affect the way that I carry myself, because I know that my village is important. And it was shown that we matter. We're such a small tribe here. And Sea Alaska really stepped up to help us and bring our history back.
It's not just Kasan that's benefiting from the repatriation. Jones says he's heard from Haida people in Haida Gwaii who admire the pole.
And that's the ripple effect of it, that it's touching people from so far away.
Jones says the pole was placed on a site where the tribe hopes to one day build a cultural center. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
In Southeast Alaska yesterday, a number of Native organizations celebrated Walter Sobolev Day. The Tlingit leader was born on November 15, 1908, and was the first Alaska Native to be ordained as a minister in the Presbyterian Church. He lived to be 102. Sea Alaska Heritage Institute observed his birthday with a panel discussion in Juneau about the Presbyterian Church's decision to close Memorial Presbyterian Church in 1963. That's Walter Sobolev Church. After the church was torn down, services moved to Northern Light United Presbyterian Church, which had a mostly white congregation. Sobolev, who gave sermons in his native language, grieved quietly and never spoke out against the church. Many of his parishioners harbored a spiritual wound that never healed. Earlier this year, the Native Ministries Committee from Northern Light successfully petitioned National Presbyterian leaders to make a formal apology. But Myra Munson, an attorney who worked with the group, said they had to fight for more.
If all we do is apologize again. There'd been apologies from the Presbyterian Church. There were apologies from the Methodist Church. There are apologies from everybody for this and that have been done, and repudiation of other bad policies. But if that's all it is, does it mean anything?
In a recent agreement, the church will receive $1 million over the coming years to make reparations. money that will be spent to promote healing and education about the harm racism causes. Rosita Worrell, president of Sealaska Heritage Institute, thanked the Native Ministries Committee for their work. And as part of the reparations, the church has also been renamed Klune Hidi, which means House of Healing. This is KTOO.